I'm delighted to be joined on the phone now by Clive Bailey, singer and guitarist with Mabel Greer's Toy Shop. Hello, Clive.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
Hi, thanks for joining us today. Now, let's go all the way back to 1966 when you formed the band. So tell us, how did you all get together?
I met Bob Hagger, who's drummer, and I met him in Fleet Street, and we were talking and we said, let's turn pro, because we're both, I think I was 16 and he was 17 or 18. And so I had a school band called The Arrows. So I've been playing in the band since I was 12. Anyway, we met up and said, let's form a psychedelic band. So we did. We got in a guitarist, bass guitarist called Paul Routledge. We all lived in, I lived in Kingston, Paul lived in Wimbledon. And we got together, formed a band and started to rehearse.
Okay, I've got to ask about the name because it just seems so of its time. It's very 60s and psychedelic. So who was or what was the toy shop?
Right, Mabel Greer's Toy Shop. That was a figment of Bob's imagination. He just came up with it.
Oh, it's not a real place you can visit then.
Unfortunately not, but it was a case of what? Mabel Greer's who? Mabel Greer's what? Toy Shop? Oh, okay. Sounds groovy. Let's go with that. So, yeah, that's his fault.
Now, you had a couple of very exciting years. You recorded a session for John Peel. Is that right?
Yeah, we did it. He gave us his Night Ride, the whole of Night Ride for one evening. Actually, it was on my 18th birthday, which I quite appreciate. Yeah, and so he gave us the half hour, and we put some songs together for that. He really liked the band, actually. And, yeah, that was good.
And you supported bands like, the list of bands I've got here, The Who and Pink Floyd when they were starting out.
Yeah, I used to hang out with all those guys Yeah, there was a lot of us. It was Rockstar on Thames as well. I was Kingston boy, so it was Clapton and Clapton went to my school, I think. And then there was everyone was there in Kingston. It was like you go to a coffee bar, you'd have the whole lot there. You had Liverpool Sound and the Beatles up north, didn't you? And then you had Kingston on Thames, Moody Blues, Genesis were in Surrey, a bit further out, a bit more posh. Yeah, it was all happening.
And Jimi Hendrix was a fan as well, came to see you play live, is that right?
That's right, he came to see us play. That was sort of my rock hero, and that was a great night. And I knew his roadie as well, he was a Kingston boy. He always used to say to me, I don't get this guy, Jimi Hendrix. He keeps on putting his guitar through his amplifier and speakers, and I'm the guy that's going to have to fix it. I wish he'd stop. I said, this is genius. You know, what do you mean I wish he'd stop? Well, I've got to fix it. So, yeah, fun days. Really fun.
Yeah. Now, in 1968, you went through a number of personnel changes, and this is when the band started to change into Yes. So were you still in the band when it became Yes, or did you leave just before that?
I'm not quite sure, it was on the cusp. So we were rehearsing at the Lucky Horseshoe and Covent Garden, which is gone now, I think. And then we had a warehouse in Shepherd's Bush, and we were recording and rehearsing for the songs, which some of the songs were on the first album, Yes album. So it was right on the cusp. Mm-hmm. Peter never liked the name Mabel Greer's Toy Shop, Peter Banks. He thought it'd be a good idea to change it to three letters. I think he was right. So it was right on the cusp of the change.
Yes, his first gig is the legendary East Mersey Youth Camp gig in the summer of 1968. Were you there by then?
No, you just left by then? I must have just left because, we had some gigs around London mainly. But no, so I wasn't at that gig, so... There you go. It was just before the change, and I guess.
We're hoping that you might have played a classic Essex venue, although going to East Mersey, it's hard to believe that there was ever any music there at all.
Yeah.
Blows the mind thinking about it. Now, this is something I don't think I've ever asked anybody before in one question. So what happened to you musically for the next 46 years?
Right. Well, when I got out of the band, it was a hard decision because I knew it was going to be big, but I wasn't really happy with the music business at that time, and I thought I'd leave. And I opened up a nightclub, actually, and I got into business. So then I got into marketing. I invented some really hot products for a while. So I kept out of music, I invented the screwball glass with a mate of mine. It was a glass with a straw etched around it. We sold like millions of them. It took me to America, and then I got a marketing company, design company. So I really got into business in a big way. And so did Bob. He joined the NASDAQ 100 as CEO of a big software company. We're both mad. But music was always there. So I got back into music. I kind of got out of it. And I was frightened to touch a guitar because I knew I'd go straight back in. So I got rid of everything. But then I got into Persian music because I used to go to Iran quite a bit pre-revolution. And I got into Persian music and I started playing the tar, santur, instruments like that. And it's quite interesting because tar is a bit like lead guitar, really. And if you know Persian music, it's quite intricate. So I kind of got back into it through that. And then I was playing and composing a bit of Persian music. And, you know, I've always liked Indian music, which is not the same, but it's still Eastern. But anyway, then I thought, you know what, I'm going to go back to guitar. So I got an acoustic guitar, 12 string, and I started on that. So I've been playing around, and I played a few sort of folky kind of things and used to play to lots of friends of mine. And so I was playing and writing songs probably 20 years back. So it wasn't a complete desert of music. But then I didn't play in a band. I'd play with sort of violinists and other Persian musicians who are classical ones, them top ones, really good ones. And so that kind of kept my hand in a bit. But when I met up with Bob and the idea of going back and playing in a rock band, I thought, yeah, I'm ready now. Venerable old geezer, I'm ready. So I did.
Now, you met up with Rob again, I think it was 2013, wasn't it? So it wasn't too long ago.
No, that's right. Not too long ago. We met up in Nice because we both lived out that way. And we went into the studio. We thought, let's just play for a laugh, just drums and guitar. And I played some of the songs I've written, and we played some of the old – we tried to remember some of the old Mabel songs. And we thought, you know, this is not half bad. So then we got found Hugo, the bass player, and Alex, who plays guitar, and we went into a studio in Paris and knocked out the first album, effectively. But then we got the part of the pre-production, sent it to Billy Sherwood, who kindly said he would produce it for us. So we produced it. Then he put his bass on as well, as well as Hugo's, or he took some of Hugo's out and put his on. And then we thought, we want keyboards. So he said, well, Tony Kaye lives in LA or around the corner. So then we got Tony Kaye, who was the original keyboard player of Yes, Babel. So, yeah.
I mean, this is something I wasn't actually going to ask because I wanted to talk about Mabel as opposed to Yes. But did you actually keep in touch with the people from Yes during that time?
On and off. I I was living in New York for about 10 years, and I met up at Madison Square Gardens when they were playing there. And at Wembley, I went to one of their gigs, and at Brighton, and went to one of the gigs. So I was always go backstage and say hi. You know, we're all friendly. There was no problem. But I didn't keep in. Oh, yeah, John came to my nightclub with his then wife, actually.
Right.
He came to my nightclub a couple of times in Chelsea. So I kind of kept in touch with him. Yeah, a very on and off, every 6 years, you know, that kind of.
Now, you talked a little bit about the album that you produced. That was 2015's New Way of Life, and that was a mixture of some old songs and some new songs. Is that right?
That's right. I took five or six Mabel Greer songs, two of which were on the Yes album. One was Sweetness and one was Beyond and Before. And then some of the ones we had on John Peel, like Electric Funeral and Janetta. So we thought, well, let's re-record those, do those again. And then I added, I think, five new songs, which I'd written on acoustic guitar, basically. And, you know, sort of pushed them up a bit, rearranged them. So that first album, New Way of Life, which it is a new way of life, had six old songs, five new ones. Yeah.
And that must have done well enough for you all to look at what you've done and think, actually, I think there's some legs in this, because, you know, you recorded the second album, The Secret. Well, actually, before we talk about The Secret, you released a five-track EP in 2016, and Images. And that was old recordings that you remastered from way back in the 60s.
Yeah, I think some of it... we did a session with Mike Leander for MCA, but I think that was mainly... I don't know, Bob put that together, actually, whether it's some John Peel or one of those sessions, but it was some of the original stuff, yeah.
Where had they been all that time? Was it a sudden discovery, or did somebody hang on to them for 40 years?
I think Bob probably hung on to them or got hold of them, or they were out there somehow. That's a good point. Pass, can't remember.
Where did they come from?
Yeah, where did they come from? But we got a lot of hits on YouTube and... You know, we got sort of 40,000, 45,000 hits or something like that. I thought, wow, this is interesting. So, but it wasn't that. It was like, we've got a lot of music in us and it's just got to come out.
Yeah.
So I thought the second album, now that was, I really enjoyed that because it was all new material. And that was great fun doing. And there's just a lot of effort in the second album. That's really, I preferred doing new stuff rather than going back to the past. Mm-hmm. I like playing in the moment. So, I was much happier doing the second album.
Yeah, now that was The Secret. That came out a couple of months ago, and it features a contribution from Peter Banks. So how did that come about?
So his manager, who was looking after his estate, called us up and said, I've got some material that Peter did. Do you want to write a song around it or put it into a song? So I said, well, send it along. Well, Bob did. And we looked at it, but there was hardly anything there. There were only like two or three guitar bits. And so I thought, how are we going to do that? But I'd already written this piano piece, which is the beginning of the song The Secret. And I thought, well, it's absolutely crazy. It's a different key, different tempo, different rhythm. But I thought, that's it. It's got to go in that one. So we worked on it. And I worked on it with Max, the keyboard player. We rewrote the middle of the song I'd done, a bit of Holst kind of music behind it. Dropped in Peter's guitar and boom, off it went. So that works. So then we introduced snippets of the limited amount of music we had through the song. I wish we had more, actually. It'd been a lot easier. But it sounded good. It sounded really like a cry from the past when his guitar comes in. It's really good. So
yeah, it fits really well. Yeah, I listen to the album and I think this is probably obvious after what you said earlier in the interview, but it does have a spiritual, mystical feel to it. It's definitely got an Eastern vibe and very thoughtful. Yeah. So that's something that is your old interest in Iranian music still influencing what you're writing and recording today?
Yeah, definitely. I'm well into Eastern philosophy. And so, yeah, definitely influences, particularly the lyrics. But it does. And there are a lot of riffs in there which are kind of in that kind of area. I can't help myself. It just come out. But it definitely got an Eastern vibe to some of it. I mean, not all of it. If you go to more and more, it's just like blues full on. But yeah, Eastern and classical. There's a lot of classical music in there. A lot of Tchaikovsky. Beethoven keeps on popping up and saying hi in a couple of songs. So, you know, it's like letting it in and letting it out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the plans for the future? Will you be taking the band out on the road and playing any live dates this year?
I think I've just come up with a name for the new album, then Letting It In and Letting It Out.
You heard it here first.
That's it. I'll do that. We want to do a gig in London. We're looking for someone to manage an agency and do that, because Bob and I both lead pretty busy lives, but we want to try and get into this more and more. Mm-hmm. So... we hope to. There was talk of doing a few States gigs, but I think what will happen, we'll do a showcase gig in London, even if we put it on ourselves. And that'll be fun, maybe halfway through the year. We'll have to get everyone together, which is not easy because all over the world. But we'll have to rehearse. We definitely have to rehearse.
It will be fun, though, won't it?
It'll be a lot of fun, and we'll have to pare it down a bit because on the album, you know, like they're four guitar parts in some of the songs. So unless I grow a couple of other arms and hands, we'll have to modify it. But that's great because, you know, I think music should be played in the moment anyway. So happy to do that.
Yeah. Well, Clive, thank you very much for chatting with me today. It's been fascinating hearing about the history of the band and where it's going in the future. We'll definitely be keeping an ear out for the live shows as well. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much. So long.